Yay! Thank you, Donna, so much. You know, I was so excited about that subtopic. That's why I had Donna be sure to tell it to you. So I want to repeat this topic because it is, like, so cool. And remember, this topic is your fault because what I do, just in the last few days before, and especially the day of the talk, is I just absolutely tune into what it feels like our joined souls really want to dangle before us in terms of concepts and just ways of describing whatever facet of us and life. And then let those concepts, et cetera, just be a vehicle through which we all, in our unity and in just the beauty of, and blessing of life, we all come into just whatever kind of space and zone and fullness that our own soulful self wants. So I came up with this cool topic, being human, what's it all about? And this even more cool subtopic, principles for human living. And I know you just heard that word, principles for human living, and you're saying to yourself, what is Bill doing talking about principles? That guy has no principles. What's he talking about? And he's never talked about principles before. In fact, he's always said, you know, forget the principles. Well, unfortunately, you're right. I don't have any principles. It's, in fact, you know, a lot of years ago now, a good friend of mine who used to sponsor my seminars at one point in time, and actually he taught metaphysical principles at a spiritual school. He once told me that he was totally baffled by the fact that I never talked about or taught principles, whether principles for living, principles for making decision, principles for growth, etc. And he finished his message to me by saying, you know, Bill, I figured it out. You have no principles at all. Okay, guilty as charged, maybe. And it is true, actually, you know, I was thinking about this today. I am on Earth not so much for those who need principles or beliefs or commandments or values or spelled out guidelines by which to live their lives. In fact, I deeply think my message and presence is strongly here for those who are looking for a more inspired way of living, like living according to their soul's innermost truth more than according to some external principles. Or, for example, living in each moment's inherent inspiration rather than basing their decisions or directions on the stated beliefs or values of any tradition. And that's truly, really what I'm here. But you know what? I just felt inspired today. Now, note how I'm covering my tracks here with that word inspired. Don't let me put this one over on you. I just felt inspired to take this less tangible, more spirit-filled wonder of human living that we all focus on and live in, and translate it, hopefully, into some daily practical term. What you're saying? Yeah, stick with me. So, for that purpose, I thought that expressing spirit and the vast world of spirit in somewhat tangible forms like principles sounded to me like, hey, a really great idea. So, bear with me as we proceed. And by the way, if you simply can't stand my talking in these tangible human terms about principles, I know it can be shocking. I do have compassion for you. Just do yourself the favor of translating my words right back into their more spirit-based form like you're used to, and I know you will feel so much better. But if you don't want to do that, stick with me here. So with that disclaimer, that's a good word, and introduction, let's look at this thing about being human, what it's all about, not from its more philosophical perspectives, as I've done so much in past talks, but in practical how-to approaches. And here's what I mean. I've often had the thought that there are some powerful and practical doorways into the mystical, into spiritually enhanced living. In fact, there were a couple of times when I actually thought about writing a book about this. Like, for example, just listing seven principles for living or, you know, something like that. But I just never felt inspired to do it. And what I'm saying is that there are some things we can do or some approaches we can take that, while they may not instantly usher us into some magnetic permanent state of unparalleled nirvana, they actually give us a human clarity or an enhanced simplicity that can serve as a strong foundation for that eventual nirvana or that deep inner peace. And I'd like to dangle these doorways in the form of some hopefully fluid principles, just like a carrot in front of your eyes and ears, hopefully to inspire your heart and to thrill your passions for the possibilities of enhanced human living that are practically and daily available to us. And of course, again, if using principles simply is not your personal style, then please give yourself permission to hear these words in their spirit rather than in their practicality. So, I'm ready. How about you? Here's what I want to do. I want to talk about five principles, five approaches. Approaches for living our human life. Approaches that can usher us into a remarkably peaceful, healthy, meaningful, fulfilling experience of this thing called human living. And the first principle or approach is this. You ready? Take charge of your personal judgments. I think it was Jesus who said, "Judge not that you not be judged." And in fact, I think almost every spiritual teacher who's ever lived has, in her or his own way, encouraged us to minimize our judgmental thoughts, to not use our mind, for example, to condemn other people. And my personal sense of the underlying wisdom in this simple approach is that it gives us a practical, tangible tool, a tool for how to take charge of our thoughts, our thinking, and if you will, a tool for training our mind how to think, training it in the way we want that mind to be thinking. So, for example, if I find myself thinking, "What a jerk that person is," just like perhaps you had five or six thoughts this afternoon, or thinking, "I hate this situation," or "Life is so unfair," or "How could so-and-so do that or do that to me?" That or any of those judgmental thoughts, I could stop that thought in its tracks, and I could tell my mind or my thinking that such a thought, you know, is not helpful to me, and then I can instruct my mind with an alternative way of thinking. For example, if I discover popping up alive and active right before my inner mind the thought, "This situation is awful, I hate it," I could stop that thought as soon as I got my wits about me, that is, as soon as I noticed it, and I could tell myself, or if you prefer, tell my mind, that, "Hey, this way of thinking and judging really isn't helpful to me," and then I can invite myself to an alternative reaction, an alternative way of thinking. For example, I could tell myself or my mind that while what just happened to me may hurt at this moment, there's a bigger reason that it happened, and I could invite that reason to make itself known. Now, personally, I've come to believe that while on the one hand, there are always deeper motivations for our judgments. In other words, when we're judging, there's something deep in us that's moving us to do that. And while those external drivers are what really need our attention more than the judgments, and any of those who've been in any group or individual experience with me really know that I tend to go for that jugular more than the more superficial thing of the judgment itself, much more what I want to say is we can actually help ourselves enormously by taking charge of the ways we think. In fact, often, simply by taking charge of our thoughts, we clear the way for whatever has been unconsciously driving us, influencing that style of negative thinking. Something, for example, like a deeper sense of vulnerability or a fear of change, for example. We allow that to surface and make itself obvious to us, thereby allowing us to begin to heal it and take charge of it. So that's the first principle. Take charge of your personal judgments. And if you find yourself judging, step in and do something about it. So let's look at a second principle for living a more empowered human life. Ready? Here we go. And it's a truth that it's oftentimes helpful to remind ourselves of. It's like a mindset. It goes like this. I'm responsible for everything that happens in my life. I want to repeat that. I'm responsible for everything that happens in my life. I remember once a lot of years ago giving a seminar, one of those self-empowerment seminars, in which I strongly suggested to all the people there that each one of us adopt an attitude and a mindset that says we're responsible for everything in our lives, that no matter what happens, somehow or other, we called it to ourselves, we created it, etc. And of course, my implication was, and still is, that if each of us takes total responsibility for ourselves, for our actions, for our thoughts, for every event that occurs in our lives, then we're free of judgments about others. We're not blaming other people for it, and we're even more free to start taking charge of changing the circumstances that invited those events in the first place. Well, what happened in this particular seminar is that this precious middle-aged woman sheepishly, hesitantly raised her hand, then apologetically, you should have heard her tone, begged me to take back everything I just said. She said, "Surely you can't mean that." And I remember her adding the words, "If I own responsibility for everything in my life, then I couldn't live with the guilt that would come. It would overwhelm me." And all of a sudden, when she said that, I got it. I got where she was coming from. And as you can imagine, I invited her to totally ignore my words. And while I didn't take them back for everyone else, it was obvious to me that she just had not fully enough risen beyond self-judgment, risen beyond feelings of personal shame, to take this more daring, this more bold approach. But let's explore just a little bit this approach of owning responsibility for everything in our lives. I recently talked to a person who had just survived a fairly chaotic situation, at least it was chaotic to him, where everything went wrong, it was a total misery, and it was one from which he was like still in shock when he talked to me a few days later. And I heard myself asking him this question: why do you think you drew this situation to yourself? Now, keep in mind, I could have just as easily have said, why did you create this situation for yourself? Or what gift were you trying to give yourself by bringing this situation into existence? Or whatever form. Well, once he got the point I was trying to make, and frankly, once he opened his vision to see that his own wisdom actually might have created this messy circumstance, he quickly came to the realization that this disastrous event was his way of inviting himself, strongly and graphically, I might add, to stop giving himself away to other people, to prioritize his own needs, to stop losing himself in other people's lives, stuff, requests, etc. And so he fairly quickly got the point. And in the process, I watched him as he took another step in owning that he's in charge of every event, every circumstance, every movement in his life. And we do that not necessarily consciously. We do it subconsciously, unconsciously, soulfully, spiritually. My sense is that somehow it's our vast spirit that creates everything in our life. It's like another version of life leading us as much as we lead life. And then our soul picks up that inspiration and that movement in our soul, like translates it into the workings of our unconscious, subconscious self, and then they translate it into our life, and they do the inviting and the energetic setup, and then we consciously show up to it, to what's happening, as we're the main actor in it all, and then somehow, if at a conscious level we can grasp what that's all about, we can be a part of the whole spiritual, soulful, unconscious, subconscious creation of it, then we're in a position consciously to become a part of the not just the grasping of the lesson, but the solution to the event or the bigger empowerment and invitation that's there for us. So let's jump right into a third principle for living, if that's okay with you. And this one goes like this: show up, don't hide, be present, embrace what's in front of you. If it's okay, I'll repeat it again. Show up, don't hide, be present, embrace what's in front of you. In my personal life, this one has called me and called me and called me without end, the show up part. In fact, no matter what jumped onto my personal plate, year after year after year, something deep within me not just invited, it demanded that I face it, that I deal with it, that I that I show up to it, that I embrace it. Nothing internal allowed me to hide as much as I wanted to, and trust me, from my early years on, I really wanted to hide, to avoid, to shrink, to run away from a lot of what was in front of me, especially if it was painful. So for me, and for a very long time, this was a very difficult inner demand. Show up. Don't hide. Be present. Embrace what's in front of you. My own fears, my own insecurities wanted nothing else but for me to hide from the pain that was sitting there on that plate, or to run from the potential hurt that could that the plate could deliver to my internal sensitivities. But in truth, I had no real choice. Something deep within, call it my soul, my wisdom, my core, my God self, something deep just kept pushing me, even after a while yelling at me, and it kept saying, like, face it, show up to it, embrace it, deal with it, be here now, be here to what's calling you, here to where the learning is, here to where the growth potential is, here to where all of life is calling you to be, right now, right here. And for me, and I believe that what I'm about to say is actually generalizable to most of us, this became ultimately a huge and quantum leap. It made just a huge difference, because trust me, I have wanted to run from so many things, and I found that every time I forced myself to face it, something magical happened. And really, I think all of us like to hide. You know, we frankly don't care for discomfort. We don't like pain. We want the threat or the perceived threat just to go away. But you know, when we do open our eyes to what's in front of us and let ourselves really see it, when we do dare to show up to it, no matter how scary it might be, even if we do so with trepidation or by inching our way slowly or haltingly into its arena, again, something magical starts to happen. And the magical happening, I think, is this. We slowly stop being scared of what's out there. We gain experience in starting to see seeming misfortune for what it is. We slowly realize that apparent misfortune is actually a gift, and the gift starts staring right back at us and making itself really clear. We start seeing that it's a sheep in wolves' clothing, or it's a pony amid the manure, or I'll stop, you get it. So showing up, whether to an external situation or an internal one, whether to a frightening occurrence or a delightful one, like even, let's face it, you've had a prayer or a desire, and the minute it gets realized and it's right there for you, sometimes it's as scary as something that's absolutely painful. So whatever it is, whether it's what's in our life now or in the life of another human being, it's a wondrous gift that we give ourselves when we show up. Sure, it's hard, especially at first. But after a while, it becomes second nature. It becomes easier. It actually becomes empowering. And best of all, it opens doorways to our enhanced ability to take increasing charge of whatever comes our way, whatever jumps unexpectedly on that gift-laden plate of ours. So that's a powerful, powerful principle to live with. Show up. Now, I'd love to shift our attention to a fourth principle. And remember, I got five of them here. And thank you for bearing with me. This is amazing. You know, it's so unlike me to talk about principles. I'm actually having a good time. I had a great time putting this talk together, by the way, today. So I hope you're having as good a time with whatever it is. So the fourth principle for living this funny thing called our human lives, and I think you're going to love this one, it's just three words. Don't believe anything. Yep. Don't believe anything. You heard it correctly. Don't believe anything, whether it's your favorite worldview or your cherished mindset or your precious values or your ever so right interpretation of whatever, or your highly desirable belief that if everyone else just saw it the same way, they'd be fine. I remember it was a couple months ago, I think I heard a quote from Rush Limbaugh, of all people, who said, I guess someone asked him if he was going to retire, and he said, "I will retire when everybody in this country believes the same way I do." And I thought that was just the most precious thing. So it just could be, I don't know if it's true or not, that he really believes what he believes. So I'm talking about don't believe anything. Your insightful theory, or even this very principle that says don't believe anything. Yeah, don't believe it. Sure enough, pure and simple, all it boils down to is those three words, don't believe it. You know, in this world of belief, and after all, almost everything around us is either a belief or a belief system or the outpicturing of some belief system, it's a real challenge, I think, to suspend belief. And that's been another one that's been a big one for me. For example, I think you need to be, I need to be, we all need to be a pretty big person to embrace what you believe to a strong enough degree to act on it in creating your life on the one hand, and be equally disengaged from that belief in the same time. Or to say it another way, the trick of truly flexible living, peaceful living, may just be to playfully swim around in the swimming pool of our many beliefs, using whatever belief is helpful to us in that given moment, but knowing that once that moment is gone, we can equally let go of the belief that supported it. That is, the belief is gone as soon as the moment that supported it is gone. And I personally think that most people who are strongly spiritually oriented, and oh gee, that just might include every one of us here, that is, people whose spiritual nature is very solidly on the front burner of their lives, that they're put together, we're put together, in their created nature to be free of beliefs. I think fully spiritual, really spiritual people really don't need beliefs. That is, they're here, they're put together, they're designed, they're created to live the spirit more than the letter of life's laws. And of course, again, almost every spiritual teacher or avatar that's hung out on this planet has said very much the same thing. They're free, they're created to base their lives on inspiration more than rules, to open themselves to the magic of each moment rather than find their fulfillment in the dictates of any belief, whether their own or others or a tradition. Yet, so many of these same spiritual beings, and you might identify to whatever degree with what I'm about to say, or you might not, so many of them have so thoroughly learned, and I certainly did this, learned the established human beliefs, and learned that that's the way we do life, that it's a huge struggle for them to let go of those beliefs, and just go back to their nature, which is just to live. That's right, just to live. And my own sense of what being spiritual is quite simple. It's that state of aliveness and presence wherein we just are. We just are, where we just show up, where we just live, where we just abandon ourselves into the inspiration of any moment, where we just let life live us, where we just merge with all that is, where we give ourselves over only to what is infinitely, what is finitely, what is all around us, what is in us. And therein, we, spiritual beings, we discover the magic and the mystery of life. Therein, we find the wondrous capacity to celebrate everything that is. Therein, we find ourselves to be the quote, the all that is, unquote. That's the alpha and omega of life itself. In short, we let ourselves experientially realize the godness and the goddessness that thrills through our veins, that soars through our consciousness, just waiting for us and anyone else to discover it, to tap into its wonder, to celebrate its juiciness. And that happens, I deeply believe, when we suspend belief. belief in anything, belief in everything, even something as basic and seemingly true as our own existence. That happens, that breakthrough, when we move beyond any and every belief and arrive thereby on the doorstep of freedom, total, absolute freedom, freedom from belief, freedom to and for experience. The experience of life, raw experience, undefined experience, unbelieved experience, pure experience, wondrous, adventurous, non-directed experience. How ready might you be, might we all be, to abandon, and I mean really abandon, completely abandon, all your personal beliefs, your prized theories, your precious knowings, no matter how either security-producing they are or good they feel, how ready might you be to let them all go? And in letting them go, to pass through a doorway, to pass through a quantum space, to take a cosmic leap into the discovery of a life that beyond beliefs is waiting for you, that is teeming with surprises. Whew! Okay, if you recovered from this fourth principle enough, let's move to my fifth and last approach to wondrous human living. And this one actually may seem like a small step backward at first from where we've just been, but stay with it and you might find like a real hidden gem here. The fifth principle for expansive human living is this: don't blame anyone or anything, even and especially yourself. If I may repeat, don't blame anyone or anything, even and especially yourself. We all know it. Blaming is the other side of the coin of judging, which is where we started, the first principle. And perhaps blaming, is the expressive voice of judgment. It's how judgment expresses out. Nonetheless, it deserves, I believe, its own special seat on this podium of empowering principles with which we move ourselves around the funny chessboard of this human game that we're in. So let's talk about not blaming just a little bit more. I think we're all pretty clear about the immediate benefits of not blaming anyone or anything, even and especially ourselves. For one, we become clear and free of that well-deserved and very fulfilling plight called victimness. And I don't know about you, but I love victimness. It's been such a friend for so long. But when we stop blaming anyone or anything, even ourselves, we let go of perceiving others as enemies or as threats. And better yet, we stop perceiving ourselves as victims or as perpetrators of any personal circumstance in life. You know, when I started in earnest in my own life the task of don't blame anyone or anything, including myself, I was amazed. I could not get over how comforting I discovered it had been to feel sorry for myself. And now, I really mean this. I am not kidding. I was amazed to discover how feeling sorry for myself felt better than comfort food. Well, in fact, I guess it maybe was comfort food. But once I gradually, but I believe effectively, stopped perceiving others as the problem and stopped blaming them as the cause of my problems, I found what a belief it was to not have perceived bad guys in my life, to not feel sorry for myself, to not feel like a victim, to not be in a perpetual stance of blaming the world for my own unwillingness to take charge of every element of my being, or every moment of my life, or, if you will, every molecule of my existence, or let's try every morsel of my mind, every second of my world, shall I stop? In short, I felt free. Free just to be me, free to face those whom I earlier perceived as threatening, free to face and be present to life itself in any of its expressions, manifestations, free to live beyond the concepts of good and bad and right and wrong and good guys and bad guys, just free to be me. And for me, at least, the best benefit of all was that bit by bit, I arrived at a breaking point, at that point of singularity, if you will, where I simply could not judge or blame anyone anymore. You know, it's a terrible thing. You get to that certain point. I'm sure you've perceived it in many arenas of your life. You get to the point where you're so finished with something that even when you try to go back to it, you can't. It hurts. Ooh, at times when I would just love the comfort of being a victim, of blaming someone. Oh, I just wish I could do it. And it's not there. Darn. I think that was the four-letter word I said. So I saw clearly that whatever happened in my life, it happened because I had created it. And I did so from a place of great wisdom, even if it looked terrible, a place of great wisdom. And I simply could not find fault with it. I couldn't blame it. I couldn't feel sorry for myself. I couldn't be a victim anymore. And of course, horrors of horrors, I couldn't even blame myself. Oh, a habit in which I had taken enormous comfort for so many years. Can you tell what pain I'm in about this? Oh. So there I was, suddenly bereft of years of cowering, fearful, inadequacy-based tradition. Tradition, a long and proven humanly held tradition which I shared with the whole human race, in which I had feared life itself, the very life that had given loving birth to me and that in truth is my own very essence and source of security. And in this light-filled, bereft state, I could finally and fully begin to explore life itself, the life that lives and waits for us beyond any belief, that lives on the other side of every personal hiding or self-protection, the life that's full of magic, full of possibilities, once we move out of blaming, judging, fearing. In short, I felt that I had finally shown up to what being human is meant to be, to showing up to being human the way it was destined, perhaps, from the very beginning of time, to be human in a way that's about being free, being fun, being empowered and empowering, about interacting with a life that's innately full of endless magic, endless wonder, a life that's rampant with unbridled grace and blessing, one that allows me to be united, intimately one with everything, absolutely everything, including you, life itself, joy and pain, everyone who's rich, everyone who lives in abject poverty. And finally, I was filled with the capacity to come back to those very same principles. Principles about judging and blaming. Principles about showing up. Principles about not believing, for example. And I can play with them. Play in them. Play through them. Play around them in ways that's fun and free, loving, compassionate, empowering of myself, empowering of others. So, wow, we've looked briefly during this sacred time together at five special approaches to moving masterfully through and in this mysterious thing, this mysterious world that we call human. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to name them again, these five principles for empowered free living, just for the record. And I know that there's got to be one of you out there keeping this amazing record. So principle number one, take charge of your personal judgments. Let go of judging yourself, of finding fault with others, of complaining about the circumstances in your life. When you do, you find a world way beyond judgment that's anything but boring. Anything but boring. It's exciting, it's wonder-filled, it's even exotic. You'll love it. Number two, I'm responsible for everything that happens in my life. That's right, everything, with no exceptions. You're the total creator of your life. Your vast spirit is the creator. Your loving soul is the implementer. Your unconscious and subconscious mind are the translators, and your conscious self is the actor on the stage of life. Put all of these facets of yourself together, and you have a creation and a creator that is inspired in every moment. What a deal! What a gift! I'm responsible for everything that happens in my life. What a way to open the gate to full living. Principle number 3, show up. Don't hide. Be present. Embrace what's in front of you. Showing up to what's on your plate in any and every moment, it opens you to the deeper meaning, the fuller invitation of that moment's wisdom. Of course, the moment's first picture often looks offsetting or scary, but when we just keep moving closer to that plate, embracing its content, tasting its sacred invitation, sampling its grace-filled offerings, we have no choice but to be blessed, to be filled with the unexpected gifts that are so often hidden at the very center of that plate, to find and discover a moment that's ultimately nothing other than God, Goddess itself. Principle number 4, don't believe anything. When we refuse to believe our beliefs, we become free, free to play creatively in them, to milk them for all they're worth, then leave them in the dust until on their own they resurrect anew in different form to aid us in our next magical encounter with and in life. Beyond belief, we're free to sample life's magic, a magic which is a gazillion times more creative, more ample, more dynamic than any belief could ever define. And principle number 5, don't blame anyone or anything, even and especially yourself. When we're free of all blaming, whether we're blaming others or ourselves, we're also free of being blamed. Yes, it's a funny thing the way it happens. People stop blaming us when they sense or feel or intuitively get that blame simply isn't alive in us anymore, that it's not a game we're playing. And it's amazing, when we're not playing it, other people stop playing it with us, and even if or when they do blame us, it simply doesn't hurt like it used to. It doesn't take like it did. It doesn't stick. We're free. Well, the real reason that I chose to play in the arena of all these principles was, of course, not to say to you, hey, let's all adopt a principle-based way of living. You know me better than that, I'm sure. No, my deeper rationale, the deeper method in my madness was this: to invite us to hang out in these tried and true bits of wisdom from various traditions. And we all know these principles are not new, they've been around forever. Long enough to stay in them, play in them, hang out in them long enough to find the treasured freedom that they have promised throughout the many ages of their existence. Then, once we find that freedom, we can all discard the principles or the pathways, just like we might throw away the map once we've reached the destination, because we don't need it anymore. But I've had a second, more underlying method or madness in designing this discussion with you, and it was the thought that, you know, one of these principles or tidbits of wisdom just, by golly, might have your name on it at this moment in your life. And what I mean is this, that your soul, your all-knowing, vast, remarkable, loving soul, just might be wanting you to take a little more charge of some aspect of your life right about now. Perhaps, as one example, your soul just might want you to show up to what's on your plate a little bit more. So maybe, as an example, maybe you've been holding back a bit from what's present in your life, externally or internally. Maybe your soul's whispering to you from its sacred dwelling place in your heart, whispering words like, hey, how about inviting yourself to show up more consciously, more fully to this circumstance, or to this focus, or this issue? How about embracing it and its deeper invitations a bit more? How about moving out of that subtle hiding place and discovering the bigger life that's awaiting you in this moment? That said, if you will, let's invite ourselves, let's move ourselves to a roaring, amazing, lightning-filled conclusion. Yes, that's it. Let's find the true power of these principles, discover anew the grace that's implied in their workings. Let's enjoy that freedom as they so strongly and convincingly promise it. So come with me to a very brief final walkthrough. Walking through the doorways of these alluring principles, through the meadows of their abundant potential, where hopefully we'll uncover even more fully the underlying power of life itself. And I just have six little things I want to invite us to. First, pick one of these five principles, any one you want right now, preferably the one that jumps immediately and spontaneously into your waiting mind in this moment. Or maybe for a few of you, your loving soul might shoot into your awareness of a totally different approach, one that we've not even discussed here this evening. Then second, allow that principle to invite you in its own way, into whatever area or focus of your life it chooses. It may be a focus that you've been thinking about for a few days, or it may be one that takes you by surprise, perhaps one you hadn't even thought of prior to this moment. And third, take the journey. Let go into the principle's waiting arms, the principle's invitation. For example, if it's an invitation to let go of all judgment, just do so. Let go. Let it happen. If it's about showing up without reservation to some particular aspect of your life, do that. Go for it. Be fully in the inspired invitation of whatever that principle is right now. Surrender into its implied guidance, its loving arms, its waiting adventure. And next, ask yourself, where or what is the deepest truth of this moment as I'm floating around, as I've let go, as I'm fully open and awake and alive to whatever the possibilities are? Where or what is the deepest truth of this moment? And let that truth or wisdom or underlying meaning or specific invitation, let it come to you all on its own, just in the simplicity and the quiet of these precious seconds of waiting. And when it comes, that answer or hint or intuitive sense, when and as it comes now, welcome it. Just welcome it, embrace it, invite it into the home of your inner heart, where it quickly becomes an honored guest, a cherished part of your inner self, a true and close friend. And finally, take it in. Whatever it is, take it in, into your soul, into your body, into your person, your life. Allow yourself to be changed by it, rather than holding on to any earlier form of self. Allow this new truth or insight or invitation to become a part of you. So while you're completing or digesting or integrating this experience, allow me to share with you one closing thought. It's a thought about this mysterious thing called our human life. And it's this: life, and human life in particular, literally is filled with awe, incomprehensible, endless, amazing awe. Awe that is so far beyond the confines of our human mind, so far beyond the limitations of any human vision, that it can be truly and fully grasped only in the mystical realms that live so majestically in the heart and soul of each of us. Yes, it's the intelligence of the heart, and it's the wisdom of the soul that allow the knowledge of our mind, and our mind is where these principles come from, to venture into the next steps of full living. It's the unlimited vision of our heart and soul that can take the mind's principles, thoughts, beliefs, and theories, and propel them and us instantaneously and miraculously into those bigger mystical realms, the invisible realms wherein principles turn magically into freedom. Energy turns majestically into light. Humanness becomes divinity right before our awestruck eyes, and that can happen with principles. This is the value of principles, that they serve as tangible touchstones, touchable cornerstones for a cosmic leap, a quantum jump into an exalted personal freedom, a freedom that's called to you and me, to all of us, to each of us from the depths of our soul, from the very moment of our birth. So, as we've shared these sacred moments together this evening, playing in the mystical power of a select five of these enriched principles or approaches to empowered living, I thank you. I thank you for being the person you are, the divinity you are, the wonder-filled being that you are. Thank you for the fun, delightful partner in crime that you are to me. And trust me, you are a criminal. As we play together in this Garden of Eden, as we bathe together in these mystical bathwaters that hide under their thin layered surface the truth of a world charged with overwhelming beauty and filled with unlimited grace, I offer you my love, my blessing, my prayer for an abundant, rich, wondrous life, one that appears both through and beyond any principle and all the principles that we've shared this evening. I wish you the fullest possible joy in this adventure that we call human. May you find, even in its difficulties, your own underlying freedom. And may that freedom claim your heart, empower your spirit, and create your life. May you find your divine center in every principle you embrace. May you love, love yourself, love others, love life itself interminably, endlessly, unconditionally, without reserve. And may your life be so multifaceted, multidimensional, so filled with blessing, so claimed by wonder that you simply can't stand it now and or forever. Thank you. I love you, and I'd love to leave you with one of my own silly poems. It's called This World of Duality. What a life! Ups and downs, ins and outs, highs and lows, topsy-turvy, brainy and zany, fasts and slows. Inside out and outside in, upside down and downside up, it's so confusing, so baffling, so bizarre, so nuts. It never stops, this funny world that makes no sense, runs so wild, takes no prisoners, is so intense. What a life, so full of risk, so hit and miss, so rough and tough. It's a world of chance, a dare, a gamble, a venture of luck. What a life, we're on the brink in this shaky, wobbly roller rink. Would it ever take a calmer turn, do you think? Be more normal, be only kind, perhaps gentle or mild? Would it ever stop hurting, stop confusing, stop baffling us all? Would it ever give up the ride, the drama, the pain, the strain? Would it? Could it? Even if it wanted it in its brain. Sure it hurts, sure it wounds, and sure it's hard, this willy-nilly, rocking, shocking earth of ours. Sure it pulls us, pushes us, throws us, nudges us. But would we want it softer, smoother, without the fuss? Would we miss the ride, the twists and turns that make us cuss? I don't know about you, but for me, I'd yearn for the jolts, the shocks, the spurts, the dance, the unexpected, unforeseen, unknown chance. I'd long for the surprising, the startling, the staggering prance in this world of opposites, of differences, of hubbub, of rants. I'd pine for the comedy and tragedy, the hue and cry of a world that knows how to live and die, of a world that pushes and pulls, grows and shrinks, and loves me, throws me, plays me, moves me on its full spectrum instrument of wobbly instincts. I love this puzzling earth, this realm of dazzling, whirling, swirling worth, of joy and misery, of laughter and pain, of sunshine and rain, this confusing blend of inconsistency and strain, this world of wonder and stress, of mystery and pain. Yes, I'm in love with its unknowable mysteries, its exotic might, that shoots me wondrously to its ecstatic height, then plunges me inexplicably to its delirious depth, and so gives me the surprise ride of my unsuspecting life and the surreal, real deal feel of the meaning of life. Yes, gratitude is on my lips, in my heart, and in my esteem, as I live, love, hurt, grieve, scream, and beam on the wild ride of this planet of whim in this world of dream. I love you. I thank you.